Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, you may be seated. First case on our calendar, 08-900, Maxine Spiller versus Skybank. Mr. Harper.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Matthew Harper and I represent the appellant Skybank, the Ohio Bank region, in this appeal. In this case, this court must decide the applicability of Ohio Revised Code Section 1109.69, the statute that governs the retention of records by banks in the state of Ohio, automatically renewing savings certificates. Specifically, the bank maintains that the appellee Maxine Spiller's claims on the four savings certificates that were at issue in this lawsuit were time barred by subsection F of that statute. The trial court and the Court of Appeals disagreed, relying on the Brentlinger decision from the Court of Appeals of Franklin County, in which that Court of Appeals held there was an exception for so-called automatically renewing savings certificates, like those at issue here. That decision, however, runs afoul of the plain meaning and intent of the statute, as well as this court's prior ruling in Abraham versus National City Bank. It also upsets the legislative balance that is embodied in that statute and creates uncertainty as to the guidelines by which banks in Ohio must keep records and may dispose of records. It creates uncertainty in a regulatory scheme where certainty is far and away extremely important. For these reasons, we request that this court reverse the ruling of the Court of Appeals and hold that Mrs. Spiller's claims were time barred under subsection F of the statute. RC section 1109.69 sets forth two important and mutually dependent principles by which Ohio banks can determine their record retention policies, when they can dispose of records. First, Ohio banks are only required to retain records for the periods of time specified in the statute or in regulations promulgated pursuant to the statute. The breadth of the statute cannot be overstated. It covers any and all records of whatsoever kind. The descriptions are extensive in the first section of the statute, and the statute includes a catch-all provision that basically says any record for any account that is not otherwise described will be retained for 6 years.
And if a savings passbook account had not had any deposit or withdrawal for 6 years, how would that be affected by this revised code 1109.069?
Well, the Abraham case that was before this court previously involved a passbook savings account. And the evidence in that case was very similar to this case in that the passbook had a specific date of last deposit, if you will. And the plaintiff in that case testified she had never withdrawn the money. The only records that the bank could offer in addition to the passbook itself was a microfiche record of accounts for a given year, which showed no account for the plaintiff in Abraham. Based on that, this court held that the statute, the predecessor to this statute, subsection F thereof, barred the claim as time barred. And to get to that result, this court looked to the date of the passbook, which I believe was a 1972 date, and then looked to the date of the microfilm listing, which was a 1977 date, used the 1977 date as the starting point, went out 6 years from that point, and found that the complaint had been filed too late and was untimely and should be dismissed. So I think that that's squarely the facts that we have here. Here we have a savings certificate, actually four of them, dated 74, 75, 76, and 1979. We have no other documents from any source except for the all account listing that was found by Skybank that shows that there was no account in Mrs. Spiller's name by 1993. So again, we use the dates that we have available to us, and we go out 6 years from 1993, and we find that this case was filed far too late.
Are there any records of earning interest, earning statements mailed out during the periods in either of these, or was that part of the Abraham analysis, or was it relevant or in evidence here?
The answer to your question is it was relevant to the Abraham analysis, and it was in evidence here, although it was not discussed as part of the trial court's ruling on summary judgment. But in Abraham, the evidence was that the plaintiff in Abraham testified that she had never received any interest statements or 1099 forms, for example, to report interest, and this court found that to be of relevance. Likewise, Mrs. Spiller testified here that she had never received any 1099s on these accounts, and the record also shows that her tax returns, at least those which were available to us, which were the most recent, I think, 3 or 4 years, showed no interest reporting from the bank.
So is it your position that we should simply just apply Abraham and that's the end of the analysis? We don't have to write anything beyond what's written already in the Abraham decision?
I believe that to be the case, Your Honor. I believe that Abraham answers this question, and the only nuance that is different since Abraham is the Brentlinger decision. And so I think what this court would be holding is that Brentlinger ran afoul of the statute and Abraham.
But that does put a harsh result on a depositor to a bank who, in this instance, happens upon a certificate which appears to be evidence of money on deposit in a bank.
Well, Your Honor, in all fairness, I don't think we know that it creates a harsh result, because that is the very point. The records that would answer the question of what happened to the money are no longer in existence. But this court recognized squarely in Abraham that there is a potential for a harsh result, but specifically held that that is a legislative issue, not subject to judicial determination or judicial exception, which is what Brentlinger did here.
With our ability to maintain records in cyberspace, how difficult would it be to extend the record-keeping abilities of banks? I mean, we don't need warehouses now to keep reams of paper, fire traps, if you will, for documents. This could all be done probably on a disk.
Well, with respect, Your Honor, first of all, I'll say I'm not a computer expert, so I won't try to be one, but banks in Ohio process...
Oh, I'm admittedly not an expert.
...process billions of transactions every day. It is a vast amount of data. And I think that it would be a substantial undertaking to say that from a given point in time forward into the future, a bank must keep all of its records for perpetuity. But more importantly, for this court's consideration, that's not what the statute says. That's not what the legislature decided when it enacted this statute.
Nonetheless, if the legislature thought the result to be harsh, it could change the law and say banks should keep records for 15 or 20 years because it's a less onerous obligation and less cumbersome.
The legislature certainly could do that, Your Honor. And my point to that would be it would be far preferable for any change in the scheme to be made by the legislature as opposed to being made by courts, which may render different results in different districts around the state. And that leads to uncertainty, because now, if the logic of Brentlinger can stand, then truly a bank loses its secure ability to manage its record retention. And it has to basically default to either your position, keep the records, or dispose of the records, but know that we're going to be at risk for claims, and we can't tell you how much they are, how old they might be, or who we might owe that money to.
Mr. Harper, if I could take you to the statute, and one thing that concerns me, the Court of Appeals seemed to suggest that this was an automatic renewal. The CD was an automatic renewal certificate?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the expectation of continuance appears to be there. And I'm trying to see where in 1109.69 you would pigeonhole this type of bank record. And I know under F they're talking about referring back to A and B. What what exactly is this certificate of deposit automatic renewal? Where does it fall within the statute, please?
Your Honor, I think the easiest answer to that and the position that we took and argued in this case was that we, at a minimum, we know that these savings certificates are captured by subsection B of the statute, which says records that are not listed in Division A and for which the superintendent has not designated a retention period shall be retained or preserved for 6 years from the date of completion of the transaction or the date of transfer to a different account.
Where you say the completion of the transaction to which the record relates,
yes.
That's where I have a problem. If you're talking about an automatic renewal certificate, it appears that it kind of continues until there's a termination of some type, or am I not figuring this out correctly?
Well, Your Honor, I think that I understand your point, and I know that's Mrs. Spiller's point as well, but I think that with all respect to Mrs. Spiller and to the court, is a distinction without a difference from the passbook savings account in Abraham. If I open, and I don't even know if you can have a passbook savings account anymore, but if I had a passbook savings account, it has no expiration date. I put my money in, and it sits there, and it will draw interest until such time as I take it out. That is no different, in my mind, than an automatically renewing savings certificate where you put the money in, and it sits there. But the court, this court held in Abraham that notwithstanding that perpetual nature of the account, that we still have to apply the statute as written. And if the only document you have is the account document that shows a last date, and then you have some subsequent document that shows an absence of an account, those two documents and the dates provided by those documents are adequate and sufficient to apply the statute. And I think the same result occurs here. So I don't really think that the automatically renewing element of the savings certificate really makes it any different than any other kind of savings account.
Is the bank taking the position that these certificates were paid out?
Yes. Our position has been based on finding the all account listing, which is our Exhibit A, filed under seal in this case. That exhibit is a listing of all accounts that bore interest during the year 1992 for one of the predecessor banks. And it shows no account for either Mrs. Spiller or Ms. Stayrook, who opened these savings certificates. And so from that, there was significant testimony at trial regarding the records retention that we have in the computer system we use to maintain accounts, and that also showed no accounts whatsoever. And so from those, we can only conclude that the accounts were closed. Now, what we can't tell you is how they were closed, whether they were closed by withdrawal, whether they were closed by submission of the funds to the state by escheat. We don't know that because those records would have been disposed 6 years after 1992 at the latest.
Is there a cancellation put on the certificate of deposit? Obviously, it looks like there's no surrender of the certificate to the bank when it's paid. How is there evidence of payment?
Well, the evidence would be in the form, if the savings certificate were not presented, which there was evidence that it was very common that it would not be presented, as long as there was proper identification. The evidence of payment would be a withdrawal receipt or a check, and those are documents that are specifically covered in Section A of the statute, and we are specifically allowed to dispose of after a set period of time. I see I have about a minute left. I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal unless the court has further questions at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Harper.
Thank you.
Mr. Fansler.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court. Thank you for hearing us this morning. If it please the court, I represent Maxine Spiller, a lady now 90 years old, and a lady whom we believe is still a depositor at what was once the Bell Fountain Federal Savings and Loan Association, 9 changes later, is now a part of the Huntington National Bank. 1 change ago was the Sky Bank at the time of the trial. I would say this. 2 courts of appeals have considered this issue. They've reached the same conclusion, the 3rd District and the 10th District. Unlike Mr. Harper, we're not asking for an exception that isn't there. We're asking this court to follow the legislation. The bank throughout this case, which is probably the reason it lost a trial and lost at the Court of Appeals, ignores the very questions raised by Your Honor about what's the date of last entry? What's the last date on this account? This case is easily distinguishable from the Abraham case in 1990 of this court for this reason. As Your Honor says, that was a savings passbook case. By the plaintiff and appellant's own testimony, that opponent had a passbook savings account, and by her own testimony, she was more than 6 years from the date of last transaction. This court, at the end of the Abraham decision, said, we are not unmindful of the potential harmful results of this decision, but it's a legislative decision. Now, our position today is that this court should not be worried about the potential harmful result. As a consumer, I don't like the Abraham decision. As a consumer, it seems unfair. As a consumer, it seems like a depositor doesn't have the right, because that lady probably knew she had never taken the money out of the account.
If I understand what you're trying to argue to us, Mr. Fansler, it's the renewing nature of the certificate of deposit that distinguishes this case from the passbook case in Abraham. Am I correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because the certificate automatically renewed every 30 months in this instance, and the bank cannot demonstrate that it the date that it last renewed, and you can't demonstrate that it didn't. So there's really both of you trying to prove something that can't, that you don't have evidence of.
Well, Your Honor, here's what we have evidence of. The account was taken out. The bank invited.
The account what?
The account was taken out, was set up. The bank invited, by its very nature, no action. This certificate of deposit is like all certificates of deposit in this state. And it says, if you do nothing, it will automatically renew.
So if we apply this statute to automatically renewing certificates, then, and if they're 30-month certificates, none of them will ever be a 6-year period of dormancy, such that the bank cannot, it may dispose of its records.
I disagree, Your Honor, because when the date of the last transaction occurs, the 6 months begins to run.
That's what I said. If it's a 30-month continuing to renew, the statute never takes effect and the bank can never discharge all of its obligations and dispose of records because the certificate continues to renew every 30 months.
It would seem that if a statute says the 6 years on the catch-all runs from the date of last transaction, no bank should ever not keep the date of last transaction. That's all it takes. We don't need every record on this account, Your Honor. We need the date of last transaction.
What evidence should, weight should we give to the fact that there's no interest statement sent to your client or any claim of interest being reported to the Internal Revenue Service?
None. And here's the reason why. I think in this case, like all cases, we're stuck with the facts of the case. The facts of this case are uncontroverted. There were never interest statements sent from the time of the inception of the account. The bank wants to say they weren't sent in recent years, and therefore they should have known better. The only testimony in the record is that they weren't even sent the first year, and the second year, and the third year, when we know they were in place. So in this case, none. It's error by the part of the bank based upon the record that we have. The bank did not in any way attempt to refute that. So we're stuck with the testimony which is in this record, which is from day one, they failed to send 1099 reports.
But what is your response to Mr. Harper's suggestion that a passbook savings account really isn't any different in principle, because it exists as long as the account is left open. So would you run start the 6 years from the date of the last entry in the account, whether it's an interest entry or a deposit or withdrawal?
I think they are different, Your Honor, and the difference is just what you put. There is going to be an entry, and for whatever reason, that's what the legislator said.
But we didn't say that in Abraham, I don't think, did we?
Well, it was the facts of Abraham. The facts of Abraham were that her own, I think you did. The facts of Abraham were that the plaintiff's own testimony was that it had been more than 10 years since the date of last transaction. And I think you said that very thing. You said in the last paragraph it may be a harsh result, but the date of last transaction is clear with a passbook savings, and even with her own account. In Abraham, she had a passbook, and her own testimony was, my last transaction was more than 10 years ago. You were left with no choice if you chose to follow the statute in Abraham, because the plaintiff's own record suggested we have more than 10 years since the date of last transaction.
Does the deposit constitute a contract with the bank?
I believe it does.
Did you ever argue that the statute has no right to abrogate a contract
that exists?
You did argue that?
Yes, ma'am.
And what was the ruling on it, or was it discussed? I don't remember it being discussed.
The decision focused only on the law in Ohio, which was Brentlinger, and Brentlinger said the very same thing that the Third District said. Again, not an exception, but it was this. Therefore, we find that certificates of deposit, like the certificates in Brentlinger, this is the Third District decision, are automatically renewing certificates of deposit. In addition, like the court in Brentlinger, we find the bank was not authorized to destroy the records automatically renewable certificates of deposit created. So they didn't find an exception. They did not find an allowance in this section to destroy these records for that distinction.
How difficult would it be when you surrender every time I've surrendered any certificate or EE bond or anything like that, I always have to give them the document back. And then that would clearly take the document out of circulation and remove the ability to prove that you still have it if the bank asks for it back at the time they give you the cash for it.
That's a very clear solution. And it was presented in this case, once again, not given credence. In other words, if the court looks at the transcript here, we presented officers from two banks in the same community, a community of 15,000 similar banks. We were not allowed to put the testimony in the record. So it was objected to and sustained. The bank put testimony on, but the principal person that put on testimony was Lori Householder, who was not, she's a member of the Sky Bank. She never worked at Bell Fountain Federal. At the very times that she is saying the bank must have been cashing in this account, she didn't even work there. So the bank let her testify about what she thinks bank policy is. But the answer, very simply to your question, is if you made them present the original, that would solve the problem. My clients had the originals at the time that they presented them.
Counsel, of course we know in small town banks they do sometimes take affidavits and cash things without returning in the certificate. But my question is, how does the unclaimed fund statute apply to this case? What implication does it have for whether or not there was a certificate of deposit that was either cashed out or whether it became dormant and shipped to the state?
Clear answer to that in this case, fortunately. Mr. Harper said in his argument, we don't know whether it is cheated to the state of Ohio. However, you'll find in the record that we stipulated in this case that it did not escheat to the state of Ohio. The record is clear, it did not escheat to the state of Ohio. So whatever the philosophical answer is to that question, in this case, that did not happen.
Counsel, what is there for us to write in this case? What new law?
Well, Your Honor,
proposition?
If you would write just the one paragraph I read to you, I'd be satisfied. I think that really is all you need to write.
And you read that to us from?
That was from the Third District Court of Appeals decision in this case, but it was also mirroring the 10th District in the Brentlinger case. That the statute, as presently constituted, requires that the 6 years begins on the date of last entry or last transaction. And perhaps it's a poorly drafted piece of legislation. I don't mean that it is, but perhaps it is.
As constituted, we do not have a date of last entry. We have a bank that created the documents. As I say in my brief, you can't walk into the bank and said, I'd like to do banking with you, but we'll use my documents, not yours. The bank created these documents. There's all kinds of solutions. Let the bank change how they do certificates of deposit. Stop this automatic renewal. That's one way. Make them present the originals. That's one way. There's all kinds of things here. Keep only a copy of the check that shows that you paid it. One document. We don't need everything. We need one document. And we're saying we don't have an exception here, but that the legislation as presently constituted requires that we identify the date of last transaction, or else the 6 years doesn't begin to run. It's clear.
Counsel, the statute, the policy in the statute appears to accord a presumption of regularity to the bank records as opposed to anybody else's records, because in order to prove that you still have a deposit, you need the bank records. But if the bank doesn't have the records, then ipso facto under the statute, after so many years, there is no evidence of any deposit. Do you think that's an appropriate conclusion from the statute, that we should accord a presumption of regularity to the bank records as opposed to extraneous records or records in possession of a depositor, which does not reflect anything more than the original deposit?
I think that granting that presumption to banks would parallel what happens in most of our society. We grant that presumption to our county recorder's office, but they make mistakes. We grant that presumption to most institutions. We need to know there'll be mistakes when that happens. But that presumption is probably a fair enough presumption. It still doesn't change the fact that this statute and this set of facts requires a last date of entry. We don't have that.
Counsel, if we rule in your favor, would we not be changing the holding in Abraham? Because that very issue was raised, as Justice Kupp has just suggested. Without the records of the bank, we really don't know where that money went. The certificate shows there was an account, and this is what Abraham said. The record of the account, the passbook, or the certificate of deposit shows there was an account, but we don't know what happened to the money. And without the records of the bank, you know, how does your client prevail?
I think if you reverse this decision, you'll be going against Abraham.
And Abraham is our current precedent.
Abraham does not speak to this issue. Abraham speaks to savings accounts. And in Abraham, look at the facts of Abraham, which were this. We have a passbook, and we have a plaintiff that comes before the court saying, here's my passbook. I didn't cash it in, so I want my money. Her own record is, my passbook shows I'm more than 6 years out, and it's the date of last entry. Statute. But here we are. Statute says date of last entry, 6 years. Sorry, harsh result, but you're barred. Here, automatically renewing certificate created by the bank, instituted by the bank, encouraged by the bank, no date of last entry, a statute that requires a date of last entry. I think a reversal here would be against Abraham, and an affirmance is in no way contradictory to Abraham.
Counsel, is it discretionary with the bank on when the money, unclaimed funds, is cheated to the state?
It is not.
And what's the rule there?
It's either 6 years or 7 years. I began doing the research.
Of inactivity, correct?
Correct, yes.
So there's no record and they went back. Well, if these were 76, then you'd go forward to 82.
You're asking me a question which is outside of the record, but I'll respond. I did that research. It did never escheat from any of these institutions to the state of Ohio. However, we also stipulated that it did not. So it didn't become part of the record any more than our stipulation, which is part of the record, that it never escheated to the state of Ohio.
And how does that bit of evidence, the lack of the funds with the state of Ohio, do you think that helps you or hurts you?
I think it helps me. I think it helps me because The only document the bank wants to look to is this all accounts list, which was 1992, 17 years after the account, much more than 6 years. If there was no activity, it should have escheated to the state in that 17 years. Now, we don't know what the year is.
If it still existed, it should have escheated. And there's, it's 50-50.
I don't think 50-50, but there's certainly that chance. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Pansler. Mr. Harper, you've saved a minute of your time.
Counsel, this doesn't play out in this case, but I'm curious about paragraph F of the statute.
Yes, sir.
The way I read it, if in this case, for example, your bank had had a record of this CD that was 8 years old, you could have still refused to pay.
Well,
it says any action brought by or against a bank based on a determination which would depend on the contents of a record, which is after the period of retention, which is 6 years, must be brought within the 6 years. So under this statute, you could have a record of this CD that was 8 years old and say, tough.
Well, certainly that assumes facts that are not part of this case, and I'm not aware of any case similar to that.
Well, but you're asking us to use the statute as a shillelagh against this CD. The only evidence, the only record is the instrument itself, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
That's the only.
I believe what we're asking is that the court apply the statute as written and as it was applied in Abraham. And I think that Mrs. Spiller's argument highlights why the statute needs to be applied in this case. Mrs. Spiller's argument is, I have the CD, the savings certificate, I say I never got the money, and you can't prove otherwise, so pay me. That's exactly what this statute is designed to prevent. And I think that looking to Abraham, there is no meaningful distinction. You can look to the date of last entry, which is comparable to the dates of these savings certificates, and apply the timeline from those dates, or you can look to the all account listing, which is the same sort of document that was found in Abraham and the court used to apply the statute. In either event, the statute should be applied as written. If there are changes to be made, if a bank is to be told that it must retain a certain record indefinitely, then the legislature should make that change or the appropriate regulatory agency.
But didn't the bank create a perennial record with a continuing renewing certificate that sort of goes ad infinitum? It was the bank's creation. It wasn't the depositor.
Not unlike a passbook savings account, that's correct. Both of those would continue until the depositor takes action to take the money out. And here, we don't know what happened between the date that the savings certificates were opened and 1992.
But the bank says this will continue. In other words, the 30 months is up, but we will continue it again.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I don't think that that is any different than a passbook savings account like the one that was at issue in Abraham.
I understand
the point. I just don't think it
is. So you're asking this court to accord a presumption of regularity, or that the legislative policy is to accord a presumption of regularity to the bank records, because you can't prove that it doesn't exist except by the absence of the record. Doesn't that really put the depositor at kind of a risk here, because the bank, and this one went through how many changes, somebody just failed to, back when they were doing it by hand, failed to put it on there, so it's gone by mistake and it's just wiped out. You can't prove it was ever there because there's no record, because mistakenly removed.
Well, I have not seen the phrase a presumption of regularity used in this context. I certainly understand Your Honor's point. I think that the case is devoid of facts which indicate mistake, fraud, or anything of the sort. It is devoid of evidence. For example, on the question of the escheat, We stipulated that there's no record of an escheat with the state of Ohio, but we have no records from our end to show whether we attempted to make an escheat, whether this money was paid out to Mrs. Staybrook, whether it was paid out to Mrs. Spiller and she's simply forgotten. Those questions will remain unanswered. And the statute does say in that context that, in essence, the benefit of the doubt goes to the bank and the bank is protected from liability. And if that is to be changed, that change should be made by the legislature. So we would ask that the Court of Appeals decision in this case be reversed and that the claims on the four savings certificates be dismissed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Harper. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.